Your money, your estate plan, your retirement. Securing Arizona's future one family at a time. This is The Word on Wealth. Intelligent financial talk you can have faith in. With your host, president and co-founder of Grand Canyon Planning Associates, John Dombrowski. Send your questions to DearJohn@thewordonwealth.com. Now, here's John.
And welcome to The Word on Wealth. I'm John Dombrowski, president of Grand Canyon Planning, coming to you here from Scottsdale, Arizona. Going to be here for the next hour, talking all things financial. And if you don't have a chance to listen to the full hour now, we're going to be posting the show up on our website at GrandCanyonPlanning.com, or you could listen to it through your favorite podcast site, The Word on Wealth. And while you're there, if you have financial questions about IRAs, 401ks, 403bs, Roth IRAs, insurance, real estate, estate planning, your taxes, you could submit those questions to me directly from the website, or just shoot me an email to DearJohn@GrandCanyonPlanning.com or DearJohn@TheWordOnWealth.com. It'll get to me either way. Well, good morning. Hopefully you're having a great morning. Wanted to cover a number of topics today, as we usually do. But again, ways to get a hold of me, you can certainly go to our website of GrandCanyonPlanning.com, or you can call us directly, 480-991-1055, or toll free at 1-866-991-4272. All right, you know, we've got a lot of things that happened this past week. We had, of course, former President Trump had a trial, which he was found guilty and had a $5 million fine to pay, and I'm sure he's going to be contesting that, and probably we'll see how that all turns out for him. Then you've got all this news on Hunter Biden and what's been happening there with the investigation that's been going on here in the House and Senate. They gave us a lot of information as to what they found, and also had requested some information from the FBI, but I believe the FBI turned down their subpoena for a request of a document. So there'll be more to come on that. But then also we've got this debt ceiling crisis, which is really probably the number one issue facing us now. And we're going to talk about that a little bit later here in the show. But just generally, we've got a $31 trillion debt limit at the moment, which we're now over that, far over that, almost, what is it, $31.7 trillion right now that we have. And we have until the end of this month to get this, you know, squared away. And the Speaker of the House, Speaker McCarthy, met with the President this week. Didn't get really anywhere as far as, you know, a resolution to this, but they certainly did have a meeting. Hopefully they're going to come to some type of an agreement. We certainly can't have our country default on its national debt. That would be pretty severe, and that would certainly not only be a shock to the economy here in the U.S., but it would certainly shock the rest of the world as well. So I believe they will come to some type of an agreement. We're going to just have to wait and see how that goes. And then I did want to talk to later in the show. I'll be talking about some issues when it comes to. Well, why don't I talk about this right now? Actually, you know, the younger generation may have to, you know, retire a little bit older than maybe what we're proposing today for Americans. You know, in France, we've seen all the protests that are going on in France, because they were raising the retirement age. And it was a very minimal change to increase the pension retirement age from 64 from 62. And they had a tremendous amount of, protests going throughout the streets, fires and damage and all sorts of things happening. You know, the U.S. Is poised probably for some type of similar change in this particular case with the Social Security retirement age. Of course, we have right now in place the earliest that you would be able to collect Social Security is the age of 62. And of course, each year that you delay that, you would receive a higher benefit. So it's a little different than what's in France. But what we are finding is that the younger you are today, the longer you have to reach what's called your full retirement age. And your full retirement age is when you would be able to collect Social Security and continue to work, earn an income or a wage, and not have a penalty or lose some of your Social Security benefit. If you are still working and you start to collect Social Security at 62, it's very possible you may have a decreased benefit by doing that. Depending on when you're born is going to determine what your full retirement age would be. But generally speaking now, baby boomers who are retiring in the next year, 2 years, their full retirement age, if you were born in 1960 or later, would be the age of 67. That would be your full retirement age. So if you waited until your full retirement age to collect, you certainly would collect more, of course, than if you collected at 62. But also, you would be able to continue to work and not get penalized for that. But really where the challenge lies now is there's a dilemma that we're faced with for the Gen Z looking forward. The burden in that case could probably be a little bit more of a challenge for them. And this is what we're probably looking at making some adjustments to the Social Security system. We're going to have to, because at the current rate, I believe they state that the fund, the Social Security fund, would be depleted in 2034, and that is 1 year earlier than what was projected in 2022, and at that point, just 80% of benefits would be payable. So we certainly want to try to get this taken care of, to get this handled, just as the debt ceiling, we want to get that handled as well. And there's going to be a lot of discussion going back and forth. And of course, politics is going to come into play, because no one is going to want to touch this, because the thought would be is as if they do, then they risk the possibility of not getting reelected, which is ridiculous, right? We should be thinking about what is in the best interest of the people of this country, not worried about being reelected. But unfortunately, that's probably going to come into play for most politicians out there. But if you were to consider today, we've got so many people that have left the workforce, so many people that have decided to retire earlier than maybe what they would have expected prior to COVID. And I'm finding now that the people who have retired, they're struggling trying to find a way to make sure that their money lasts, that the money that they had saved lasts. So we've got this, this crazy inflationary period that we're going through right now, which is causing a little bit more stress on the average person's budget out there. And it's also creating a little bit of a challenge with the stock market, as we've seen last year was a terrible year for the market. So if you had someone who retired last year or 2 years ago, now they're living on less than what they were when they were earning a wage. They're trying to collect Social Security at maybe a lower amount if they collected before their full retirement age. And now they've seen their investments potentially go down in value and the cost of everything go up. This is obviously a recipe for disaster for them. So I would encourage people out there, if you are still working and if you're thinking about retirement, it's going to be important for you to really consider trying to maybe get to that full retirement age before you actually trigger your Social Security benefit. Each year that you wait right now, that benefit is increasing 8%. And as well, we've seen a substantial increase for cost of living adjustments that would come along with that as well. So before you just arbitrarily think, well, I'm going to collect Social Security at the age of 62 because I think Social Security is going to go bankrupt and I want to get my benefit, please make sure that you talk to someone and get all the facts before you make that decision. Because ultimately, taking Social Security early, if you're still working, could certainly create not only an additional tax benefit for you, but also you may get a reduction in that Social Security benefit. And in the long run, that may not be in your best interest. So there are still some strategies available for you to look through and to look at and to be able to make an educated decision. And I encourage people, if you're considering this scenario of maybe a retirement or maybe taking Social Security early, please talk to someone about that. If you need someone to bounce some ideas off of, please reach out to us, of course, here at our firm, Grand Canyon Planning. We'd be happy to sit down and talk to you about that and give you some ideas of maybe some strategies that you can use to be able to create sources of income that you can feel confident and comfortable will last, not only now while you're continuing to work, but ultimately in retirement as well. Because, you know, it's not all about today. It has to be something that you have to consider long term. How am I going to continue to receive income once I do decide to retire and make that income last as long as I do, along with not only Social Security, possible pension, but what about, you know, your 401k savings, those IRA savings accounts? All of those have to come into play when we're talking about creating an income strategy that's going to last as long as you do, so you don't run out of money before you run out of time. All right, I'm John Dombrowski. This is The Word on Wealth. Stay with us. We've got lots more to talk about here on the show. Of course, go to our website, GrandCanyonPlanning.com. All right, welcome back. I'm John Dombrowski. This is The Word on Wealth. There's so many things to talk about when we do the show each week, but I wanted to touch on a couple of important things here I think that can help us, whether it's, you know, how to properly title accounts and to accomplish certain goals. But I'll get into that in a moment here. I wanted to give you ways to get a hold of me. Of course, you can check out our website, GrandCanyonPlanning.com, to get our information. Send me an email if you'd like with a question to DearJohn@GrandCanyonPlanning.com or DearJohn@TheWordOnWealth.com. Same comes to me. I wanted to bring on one of our resident guests, estate planning attorney Jonathan Muntz. Good morning, Jonathan.
Good morning, John.
How you doing?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. I wanted to touch on an email question that I got here, and it talks about, does it make a difference for me to have assets in a trust or to hold them individually to pass them upon my death with an increase in the tax basis? So maybe this is more of a tax question, but I think we could probably talk a little bit about this. We're not going to give tax advice. You should always talk to your tax advisor. But
I'll just say this. I think people worry about this issue too much.
Right.
And they perseverate over this issue. People should look up that word.
Yeah. Wow.
They focus and dwell on this issue too much. And it's honestly, this is an important thing, but the more important part of this is you need to make sure your asset's going to transfer to your loved one in the first place.
Right.
So, right. I mean, taxes are important, but honestly, that's not, we all got to pay them,
right?
It's the one thing we all have to do. So it's more important that we make sure that we've effectuated a correct and legal transfer. And the easiest way to do that with our property is through a revocable living trust.
Sure.
Now, one of the byproducts is that we're going to get a step up in basis, which simply means that when that person receives that asset, it's going to be valued at the date for tax purposes, capital gains purposes, valued at the date of the decedent's death,
right?
Or the person who created the trust, their death. So the date of their death, which, for instance, when you talk about security, so you have a stock and I purchase a stock at 50 cents a share and now the stock is trading for $250 a share and I've never sold it. The reason being, right? Because I didn't want to pay capital gains.
Right.
So upon my passing, still have that stock, it passes to my loved ones at that step up in basis. So when they go to sell it, they sell it based on the value of the stock on the date of
your death. Right. So that's a substantial benefit if indeed someone's in that position. It could be that way for a stock. It could be.
Or real property.
Real estate.
Buy a house in Arizona 30 years ago for $50,000, which I know sounds crazy for people, but ask around. You're going to find someone who did.
Right.
And in a really nice areas. And now that house is worth $750,000.
Yeah, $1 million, whatever. Right. And then, of course, you know, we do have that exemption of a $250,000 exclusion on a gain for a personal residence, Jonathan. Each individual has, if you lived in it at 2 out of 5 years. And of course,
and then you go to sell it.
And if you sell it while you're alive, right.
And that doesn't apply to a second or third property.
Correct.
It's your primary residence.
Primary residence.
And you know what? Honestly, sometimes I think that we just get caught up in this and everyone's... The taxes aren't the thing that determine whether you're going to do this or not. Now, if it was at the end of the year and we were trying to figure out whether we should take some gains now or take some losses, then that's a time we bring Darren on and we talk about. But I think middle of the year,
Yeah.
We're not so worried about that right now.
You know, the other thing too, of course, Jonathan, is the market conditions play a role, should play a role in any financial decision as well. You know, if you've got a property that you think, gee, I would love to sell it, but I don't want to sell it because I'm going to pay tax on it. Okay, well, you know, we had a situation where we have cycles in any market, such as the real estate market, where back in 2007 and 8, you know, real estate prices were going up and up and up and up, and then all of a sudden one day they came down, and they came down hard and fast. You know, so if you had a property that had some tremendous amount of appreciation, you say, well, I'm not going to sell it because, you know, I don't want to pay the tax on it. But then when the property fell 20, 30, 40% in value, all of a sudden you're going, gosh, I wish I would have sold it back then. I wish I would have paid the tax on it back then, right? So there's always that. There's no absolute in any scenario, and it's certainly something that needs to be looked at, market conditions.
I mean, sure. I will just say this, right? If you need the money and you have the money in your house and that's the only asset you have,
yeah,
then guess what? It's probably time to sell.
Could be.
Right? Whatever the reason is.
If you need the money.
Yeah. When I say if you need the money to live.
Sure.
So if it's a situation in which you're going to go into long-term care and you know that you're not going to live in this house anymore, then it may talk to your loved ones and your family, maybe time to sell the house.
Sure.
And tax consequences just might not matter at that point because it's more important that you deal with this asset.
And get the proper care.
And I don't want to say, I mean, obviously taxes are something we're going to think about and we're going to focus on, but I sometimes feel like we dwell on this. Why? Because too many people, too many talking heads, not us, but too many talking heads, too many editorialists, and too many people, like it's news. It's what you hear about all the time. Don't pay too much in taxes. Don't pay too much in taxes. Well, it's a factor, but it's not the end fact. It's not the most important factor. Now, right. In a certain circumstance, it might be, but in general, when we're talking about this, the last thing you're ever going to do is sell one of these highly appreciated assets until you absolutely have to.
Right. Right. Right.
And so why may you have to? Because it's just change of life.
Sure.
Right. That may be important. Or, you know, if you're like all of our clients, or I hope like all of our clients, these are assets you eventually are going to pass to your children,
mm-hmm.
to your right. loved ones. And right. so that, as we said, the best way to do this is through a revocable living trust. Because you get the step up in basis.
Yeah.
But I don't think the tax issue should be a reason why I'm like, well, I'm not going to sell this. Because if you have to sell it, it's okay. And it may be you have other assets to sell first, because I would always argue you sell property last.
Yeah. And Jonathan, of course, you have you know, a variety of different asset classes. Possibly you have cash in the bank. You've got investments in the stock market. You may have an annuity. You may have life insurance, cash value. You may have real estate. Any of these, all of these have to be taken into consideration.
Correct. And obviously. One make more sense to liquidate than another because of why? Because maybe it's more advantageous to you financially because there's less taxes.
Sure, sure.
Or there's less of a hassle in selling it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's like the person asked me the other day that said, Jonathan, should I sell the gold bars that I have up in the attic?
Right.
And I'm like, well, maybe not now. Well, I just, you know, I don't want to have the gold bars anymore. I'm like, well, you kind of have that for a rainy day, but you have cash in the bank. So use the, I don't know.
Yeah, it is kind of funny when you mention that gold up in the attic. I'm going to tell a quick story here, which I thought was kind of interesting. And I would never recommend this, first of all.
Yeah, don't put gold in the attic.
But I met with a client who had called. He heard us on the radio. And, you know, I always say, hey, gather all your financial memorabilia, shovel it into, you know, bring it into the shoebox, and, you know, we'll open it up and, you know, we'll take a look and make sure we get everything in place. Well, this particular gentleman, he couldn't come to the office for whatever the reason was. And he had asked, he wasn't mobile, but so he asked if we could come out to the house. So in this particular case, I did go out to the house and I met with him. And he had a ladder that was in the hallway. And the ladder was underneath a like a opening in the ceiling where, you know, you'd have attic access. And on his table in his living room were boxes of gold coins that he had kept up in the attic, brought them down to show that this was part of his shoebox collection, as I always say, right? And I suggested to this person, I said, hey, you know, maybe not leaving the gold coins up in the attic again. And he was an elderly gentleman too, so climbing up on and down from a ladder, probably not the best idea. But I suggested, hey, maybe you want to get a safety deposit box or some other safe or something, somewhere where you could keep these coins and this precious metals rather than up in the attic. I just thought that was funny when you said that.
Well, I mean, it is because it's, well, just as a side note, and it's way off topic, when you have assets that are valuable assets like this you haven't documented, because a lot of times people don't want to document it, right?
Right.
That's why they have the gold coins to begin with.
Right.
The problem is whoever gets into your house first,
yeah,
there's always this risk that they're going to be tempted to take it all and pretend like it wasn't there. I even heard a story of a person who passed and the car went missing. And everyone involved was trying to figure out what happened to the car. Like, did this person own the car, or had they already given it away, or did someone just steal the car? Now, how do you go about finding out if someone fraudulently changed title when you don't have it?
Yeah.
Right. And that, so it's a little bit easier to track down what happened with the title of that car than it would be if all of a sudden boxes of gold are missing.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, has happened. I heard 5 years ago, I knew some folks, and when this person passed, the allegation was that someone had cleaned out the garage filled with, you know, plastic storage bins that had precious metals in them, and there was none left. And so I would just say that when you have precious items like this that are part of your estate, there needs to be some inventory so that when people come to settle your estate, your loved ones, they know for sure what you actually had.
Yeah. And it's been this way. It's going to be, you know, if you have your trust in place, which directs how you want all those assets to be distributed, then that particular asset would also be included in that. And that's what you're talking about. So you can have a way to inventory all those assets.
Because you know, Uncle Joe's coming in to settle my estate, and he remembered I had 42 boxes of precious metals, but unbeknownst to him, in the past 10 years, and I only have 4 boxes because I've been
selling it off or giving it away, whatever.
And so he comes and says, well, there's not 42 boxes here. Where'd the rest go? Someone stole it. So unless there's, that's what I'm talking about. So that's both for the person who's coming to settle the estate, needs to know what was in the estate. And then the person who's creating the revocable living trust, there needs to be some master inventory.
Yeah. And I would say out there too, for folks that maybe don't want to hold gold coins or go hold silver, you can buy these types of assets within other forms, such as an ETF, an exchange-traded fund, and you can actually, you know, hold some type of a position in that precious metal.
And I mean, I'll admit right now, I have 2 gold coins, and I don't know what to do with them. So I just sit and look at them, and I don't know, because they're supposed to be for a rainy day.
Right.
What do I do with them?
Well, you can
go. I mean, the goal is not to lose them, not to forget where I put them and lose them, because if you hide them too well, you're going to forget where they are.
Yeah, you don't want that, Jonathan. I agree.
So they need to go somewhere safe. Yeah. A safety deposit box or safe.
Hey, estate planning attorney Jonathan Munch, appreciate it as always. If you want information on how to establish some type of an estate plan, your revocable living trust, please reach out to us here at our firm, GrandCanyonPlanning.com. Check out the website to schedule an appointment, or you can call us directly, 480-991-1055. We're going to take a short break. We'll be right back. All right, we're back. I'm John Dombrowski. This is The Word on Wealth. I'm going to be with you here for the full hour today, and hopefully you've got ways to get a hold of me. If not, I'm going to tell you. Of course, you can go to our website at GrandCanyonPlanning.com. If you want to shoot me a question that we can answer here on the air, that would be sent to DearJohn@GrandCanyonPlanning.com or DearJohn@TheWordOnWealth.com. Come to the same place. Our phone number is 480-991-1055 or 1-866-991-4272, and you can schedule an appointment by phone, or if you'd like, you can request an appointment right on our website as well. A couple things I want to talk about today. You know, we see that, of course, the issues that we're faced in Washington right now. We've got Kevin McCarthy met with the president this past week. Not much happened trying to get this debt ceiling crunch fixed. And I want to talk a little bit about that. But I want to talk about maybe some of how that can affect you, and what does it mean to you? What does it mean to your portfolio? What does it mean for tax purposes? All the above. I want to bring in our resident guest, Darren Sigrist of Sigrist, Cheek, Potter & Heiser. Darren, hey, how's it going? Good morning.
I'm doing well. Good morning.
Good. Hey, this whole issue about this debt ceiling has got a lot of people concerned, and it should.
Sure.
Should be, you know? So here we've got $31 trillion. Over $31 trillion of debt. We're already in what's considered to be extraordinary measures being taken by the Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen right now. And she's, of course, shooting out there that there's some problems here if we don't get this debt issue handled. And she doesn't even want to talk. You know, someone asked, she was being interviewed this past week, and they said, well, what if, you know, how would you prioritize the debt if there was a default? And she said, well, I don't even want to contemplate that and get into that, right? Because it would be kind of a first, never happened, right, where the government defaulted on its debt. And let's bring it down to the reality so that the average person out there can understand what this really means. If you have your own personal life, a lot of credit card debt, you have a mortgage, you have a car loan, student loans, and all this different debt, and it gets to a point to where you can't pay the interest on that debt and you stop making a payment somewhere along the line or completely, there's going to be a consequence for that. Yeah. And there's going to be an order of how that debt would ultimately be collected.
Right.
Right? Some of it is secured debt, and some of it is unsecured debt. Your house is secured by the real estate itself.
Yeah.
So that's secure, right? So something happens, you default. Well, then bank can come in and foreclose on you and take your house.
Your car loan, you default on that.
Same
thing.
It's
going to be a tow truck.
Yeah, tow truck comes, picks it up.
Driveway.
Yeah. And then on your credit cards, well, those are unsecured. So the credit card companies would have to come after you, right?
Right.
In some fashion or another. Student loans are a little different. That's another whole
right.
thing, because you can't claim bankruptcy and get out of your student loans. You know, that's a government yeah. loan, right?
That's right.
So, but when it comes to the national debt, and this is debt by the government. And what does that debt consist of? Well, consists of loans, basically, to the government, whether it's treasury bills, treasury bonds, different types of debt instruments that the government floats out there to raise money to be able to continue what the function of our government is. And really, the way that they have to cover their debt is only one way, and that's to create revenue, which is tax revenue. Am I right on that?
That's correct.
So, Darren, if the government were to default, what does it mean? Any ideas of what it ultimately means for investors out
question.
There? I've got some ideas. Maybe I'll throw them out to you and you can kind of comment on them. From a tax perspective, if you own a treasury bill or treasury bond, you're getting an interest.
Right.
You know, on that. And then there is ultimately a repayment of that debt on its maturity date. So if you've got a short-term, maybe a one-month treasury, you get the interest and you get your money back in a month.
Right.
But if the government doesn't have the money to pay you, if there was a default, and if the government did not repay, how would something like that be handled from a tax perspective if you didn't get repaid on that?
Well, you obviously wouldn't have the income.
Right.
You'd have a taxable loss
right.
on that. And do you have recourse against the federal government? Probably not.
Probably not.
I don't think you do.
Right.
As just an individual holder. I think there's the flip side of that on a lot of that credit card debt and mm-hmm. other debt that you were mentioning in the beginning of the conversation. If that's forgiven,
right,
that becomes taxable income.
Right.
Unless yeah. you have a bankruptcy mm-hmm. And declare bankruptcy. Or unless you can prove insolvency.
Right.
But most likely you're going to get a 1099 on that cancellation of debt. Maybe you didn't pay a $12,000 credit card bill.
And it gets charged off in a bankruptcy.
And it gets charged off.
Yeah.
Or it just gets charged off. It's canceled.
Yeah.
They issue a 1099 cancellation on that.
Because basically you got something for that money. You bought a product.
Correct.
And you're enjoying it. And so now, being that you didn't pay for it, they're going to charge it off on their taxes as a loss, but
correct.
You're going to pay the tax on it as if you earned an income of some type on it.
That's right.
Yeah.
Same thing happens with homes,
yeah.
you know, on a short sale. And, mm-hmm. you know, we've already gone through this in
yeah,
the very
back in,
recent
back
past.
Back in 2007 and 8,
yeah. On the investment side, again, I think we're going to be seeing a lot of volatility between now and when the decision is made on whether to raise the debt ceiling or
yeah.
not. So I think the volatility is going to... It's going to impact everybody.
Yeah. Now here's, you know, let's, I'm not trying to be a pessimist here. I'm not trying to be an alarmist or trying to, you know, put anybody into a situation where they're going to panic on this. That's not what I'm talking about.
Right.
I just wanted people to understand the mechanisms and how things actually happen here. So do I think that their government's going to default on the debt? I don't believe so. I think that they
no.
will come to some type of an agreement. I believe both sides are playing, you know, their politics is what's going on right
sure.
now.
And I think the politics of it is, I think one party, whether they're sincere or not, they're trying to control some spending.
Yeah.
Right? I mean,
yeah.
that's going to be the mantra.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the budget just has too much pork in it. And
right.
too much miscellaneous spending. The other side is saying, hey, that spending is necessary.
Right.
And philosophically, we can argue about that. But at the end of the day, I'm not sure there's many people, if you poll 100 people in a room, that wouldn't say that the government's kind of out of control in their spending.
Right.
I mean, whether it's the way the spending breaks down, yeah, they shouldn't pay so much for defense, but they're not paying enough for social programs, or they're paying too much for social programs and not enough for
defense or whatever.
Defense,
right.
whatever side you fall on, at the end of the day, there's a lot being spent.
Yes.
And the thing that I think we're seeing too, and have seen over the last couple of years, is there's a consequence for everything. And part of the consequence that Janet Yellen is saying is, well, you know, we thought that we might be able to make it through September, but now we're going to run out of money by June 1st.
Right.
And the reason for that is because of the reduction of tax revenues that are being collected on current year tax returns. Oh, wow. It took a magician to figure that one out.
Yeah.
They've pretty much trashed the economy. People are spending money on so many on interest and the car loans and everything else.
Corporations,
their costs are going up well in excess of what their pricing can go up. Again, it just amazes me whether they're stupid or not. I think they're conveniently stupid,
right?
On certain issues, you could have seen what's coming,
right? Right. Yeah. No, I agree. And you know, when we see the Silicon Valley Bank default and all the other banks, why couldn't the regulators, number one, have been in there seeing what was happening, and number two, why wouldn't their money managers at that bank, be able to see what was happening to their portfolio in real time? But no, they waited until it was too late.
Well, and I think part of that is it's real easy to point the finger at the bankers. Well, the Fed's numbers and projections weren't to have, a 25-fold increase in interest rates in the last 11 months.
Yeah.
It wasn't. They were projecting something more normal.
Sure.
But it's real easy for the regulators and the government officials to say, oh, the banks did it. Well, the government created it based on their false projections. And the Fed, if they knew they were going this direction, they not only needed to say it.
They should have been better communication.
Included in their projections of what the economy was going to look like, but they didn't want to because they might scare people.
So let me get back to again, Darren, now. For those out there who have a portfolio, you may have some bonds within your portfolio. If the government did default, which I don't think they will, I believe it would be very short-lived. But, there would be almost like an erratic heartbeat for the moment. The heart would stop for a moment, and then it would be, it'd be shocked back into beating again. And most likely all of that built-up debt that was not paid would be paid right away.
It would be paid. I think the interest payments would probably be recouped and replenished. But to your point, it's going to have an impact on the markets, whether it's the debt markets, whether it's the long-term or short-term interest rates.
Yeah.
I think we're living some of those nightmares that people talked about 20 years ago.
And I think, too, Darren, it wouldn't only be a shock to the United States, it'd be a shock to the world because, of course, the world holds U.S. debt. It's not just Americans. We all hold, whether you have savings bonds or treasury bonds or whatever it might be, T-bills. But the other countries in the world also invest in the United States because they believe that their money is guaranteed by the full faith and credit of the United States. And that's why we cannot allow this to happen. And
I
hope that both sides come together on it. And I believe they will. So just wanted to go through that exercise again, not trying to create fear here at all, but it's a good discussion to have.
It certainly is.
Yeah.
Be aware.
Yeah.
Be aware of your investment scenario. Yeah.
All right, I'm John Dombrowski. This is The Word on Wealth. We'll be right back after this short break. Stay with us. All right, welcome back. I'm John Dombrowski. This is The Word on Wealth. Going to be with you here through the end of the hour. And ways to get a hold of me, of course, you can check out our website, GrandCanyonPlanning.com. If you've got a question and you'd like me to get to that on the air, we could do that as well. Shoot me an email to DearJohn@GrandCanyonPlanning.com or DearJohn@TheWordOnWealth.com. Both come to the same place. You can request an appointment as well on the website, or you can call us directly to schedule an appointment at 480-991-1055 or toll-free at 1-866-991-4272. There seems to be this discussion about inflation that's been ongoing, obviously, for quite some time now. And, we've been watching as the CPI numbers came out this week and the PPI numbers came out this week. And we're starting to see that inflation is subsiding, not as fast maybe as many would like. And the Fed especially, their target of 2% is what their target is. But inflation through the CPI numbers coming in at 4.9%. That's down 0.1% from last month. And the effects of inflation are felt everywhere in our life, as we know. Just about everything that we have been purchasing, whether it's goods or services, has been at this elevated or inflated price over the past year and a half. And it's more and more difficult for people because of that. I'm going to talk a little bit about the debt ceiling here in a minute, but I wanted to touch on this because there was a report that came out, Outlook for Household Spending, slumping in April, and this was a New York Fed survey, and it shows that household spending is expected to decrease significantly over the next year, according to this report. And you know, the current, it says here, expectations for April showed that the outlook for spending fell by 0.5 percentage point to an annual rate of 5.2%. This is the lowest level since September of 2021. So put yourself in this position as of right now. Ask yourself these questions. Do you think you're going to be spending more money on things this year, maybe, or are you going to try to pull back, and are you going to try to spend less and try to save if possible? And this is what, you know, this report is showing here is people are feeling they are going to spend less. Now, when I say they're going to spend less, this is what they would like to do, right? Spend less. Of course, they're going to spend more on certain things because the prices are higher, but the idea is they are trying to conserve their money. And, part of the challenge is that could be difficult for people to do if you're living on a fixed income. And if you've got less money coming in than going out, that's awful difficult to do, right? Because you have certain things that you have to spend money on. If you're working and you've got a drive to work, you've got to buy gas. And in this study, it talks about consumers expect to see gas prices climb about 5%+ over the next year. I mean, I hope that's not the case. It seems like we're paying some of the highest prices per gallon that we've paid in just about forever. We're at the peak, I think, of what we've paid prior to you know the pullback that we did see slightly when the president went into the strategic petroleum reserves to increase supply. But you know, everything that we buy today is much more expensive. We haven't really seen the prices reduced. Food prices are projected to continue to rise at about 5.8%. That is a 0.1% decline from the previous month, but still, it's a substantial increase. The outlook for college costs did drop, falling to an expected increase of 7.8%, it says, and that was 1.1 percentage points lower than March. So we are seeing certain areas of the market pull back, but some areas of the market, of course, and some of the staples and some of the things that we need to spend money on regularly, unfortunately, are not, you know, falling fast enough for us. We're going to keep an eye on this, but what did happen as we did see this the CPI numbers come out this week, that did indicate again overall that inflation is beginning to wane. And that is good for the economy, right? And that also could bode well for the thought that the Fed may be at the point to where they would no longer need to continue to raise rates. And that's really one of the biggest, I think, benefits of, you know, the idea that we're seeing inflation begin to slow down. Now, I do also want to talk about this debt ceiling issue. And I know there's a lot of people out there that maybe you don't really follow you know, what's happening here when it comes to the national debt, but we're over $31 trillion right now. And that is a staggering number when you think about it. And the actual debt that, you know, we've amassed over this time is costing this country an incredible amount of money just to service that debt. It's just like any one of us who borrows money. If we continue to borrow money, at some point, if we went to a bank to borrow money, they're going to look at what our income versus our expense, and they're going to qualify whether or not we can get this debt. And in many cases, if you had a scenario such as the U.S. government right now, you probably wouldn't be able to get an additional loan. Well, this is what our people in Washington are going to be voting on here. And this past week, Speaker McCarthy met with President Biden and his team to discuss the idea of the debt and increasing that debt limit. And if they did, what they would want in return. And of course, the president's saying you can't hold this debt ceiling hostage with some other demands. But if you really look at what has been proposed by the Republicans, it is not a ridiculous idea to consider. We're going to raise the debt. We're going to do that. But we want to also try to get spending under control so that we don't have to continually do this. But unfortunately, the meeting didn't go very well this week. They did not come to any type of an agreement. Now, backdoor, they probably have some things that they can agree upon, but at least at this point, we don't really see any common ground yet. We do have until June 1st, so we have a few weeks left before we're going to be really under the gun as to getting this deal completed or not. And if we don't, well, the alternative is absolutely something horrific to think about, that the U.S. would default on its debt and not pay its debts. And what does that mean to you, the average person out there? Well, if you do hold any type of government debt, such as a treasury bill, a treasury bond, or U.S. savings bonds, all of those will be affected by this. And it's going to be critical that the U.S. does not allow this to happen. And I do believe that they will come to some type of a resolution, but it might be at the thought that the current administration may actually have the upper hand here, and we may not be able to tie anything to the raising of the debt ceiling. If we went into a default, what would that mean? We talked about that a little bit earlier. I think it would be very short-lived. And it would be immediately reconciled by some type of passage of some bill, which would ultimately bring everything back to, in line. But if it happened, I think it would be a pretty big shock to the system. Now, I would say for those out there who do hold debt right now, do you have to sell your treasury bill or your treasury bond or your U.S. savings bonds? I don't think we need to go to that extent and that to panic such as that. And I'm not trying to create any panic here, but this is really a difficult time for this country. And I think that if there was any way possible for people to put, politics aside and to come to some type of an agreement here, now is the time to do it. And I hope that we can ultimately get this done. We're going to find out here very shortly over the next couple of weeks, and we're going to stay tuned with this. We're going to keep a close eye on it, and we will keep continuing to bring attention to it and keep you up to date on it. But what we're doing in our portfolios for our clients, well, we're making some slight adjustments just in case. We want to certainly give some downside protection to our portfolios. And again, if you're looking for that type of investment management style, well, certainly reach out to us. You can do that by going to our website at grandcanyonplanning.com. Happy to sit down and talk with you and discuss what we're doing and what we could be doing to help you. Until next week, though, I'm John Dombrowski reminding you, don't run out of money before you run out of time.
The Word on Wealth with John Dombrowski, president and co-founder of Grand Canyon Planning Associates. Call and schedule your complimentary financial consultation at 480-991-1055. For personalized financial and retirement advice, that's 480-991-1055 or toll free at 1-866-991-4272. Visit us at GrandCanyonPlanning.com, like us on Facebook, and follow us on Twitter. Securities and advisory services offered through Client One Securities, LLC, member of FINRA and SIPC, and an investment advisor. Grand Canyon Planning Associates, LLC, and Client One Securities, LLC are not affiliated.